Chapter 6. Switching Jobs. It's rare for a software engineer to work at the same company for their entire career. Even Satya Nadella, who became CEO of Microsoft in 2014 after joining the tech giant as a software engineer 22 years earlier in 1992, had an engineering job at Sun Microsystems before joining Microsoft. So, what are sensible approaches for switching jobs and knowing when to pull the trigger and take an opportunity elsewhere? In this chapter, we cover 1. Exploring new opportunities. 2. Waiting for a promotion versus switching jobs. 3. Preparing for tech interviews. 4. Downleveling. 5. Upleveling. 6. Onboarding to a new company. 1. Exploring new opportunities. There are plenty of reasons to explore job opportunities, and they fall into a few categories. Actively looking for a job. The most obvious case is when you want or need a new job. This could be for several reasons, such as you're a new graduate seeking that first opening in your career. You've lost a job and need to replace it. Your personal circumstances change and you need a job that fits. Cases may include moving to a new location, needing more flexible work arrangements, and more. You're unhappy at work, which could mean there are problems with your manager, your team, or the environment. Moving internally isn't an option. You realize you are paid well below market rate and want to correct this by changing jobs and earning the market rate. When actively looking, it's good to lean into the process, which means searching job openings and, at the very least, responding to inbound messages. You should probably update your LinkedIn profile and turn on the setting to privately indicate to recruiters you are open to work, and be clear with recruiters and hiring managers that you're seeking new opportunities and have a decent idea of what these would be. Passively open to opportunities. Other times, you're okay with your current job, but keep an open mind for anything interesting that may come along. You're not actively searching job openings, but read inbound messages from recruiters and follow up with some. If an inbound opportunity piques your curiosity, you'll talk with the recruiter and engage in the recruitment process. In this situation, you don't feel much pressure to get the job you could interview for. You also have pretty high expectations, usually a step up in compensation and opportunity. You can afford to be picky, as you're okay in your current job. However, the longer you passively engage in interview processes, you might admit to yourself that you're ready to leave your current job for something that's more than okay. When you're happy in a job. There are reasons why it's good to engage in the job search and interview process when you're satisfied with your current job. To establish your market value. Am I being paid my worth is a question many people ask. An approach that's hard to beat for answering this is to contact recruiters for a sense of the salary range on offer. You don't even need to go through the whole interview process. Just ask a recruiter or hiring manager what range to expect. If this is well above what you currently earn, you may decide to pursue the job vacancy. To get a sense of how employable you are. It's easy to get rusty with tech interviews. Interviewing while employed can be a way to keep your interview skills sharp. To level up via a new job. You could interview in the hope of getting a better offer than you currently earn, which would mean you don't have to wait for a pay rise via promotion at your current workplace. There is no single best approach for exploring new opportunities. The thing about opportunities is that you don't really control how and when they arise. What you do control is whether to engage with them and how seriously to take them. I have personal experience of passing on opportunities while being happily employed that I wish I'd considered more closely. In 2011, I ignored a reach out from a small startup that had just raised $8 million in seed funding. I didn't think too much about this startup, from which someone with the title QA Testing wanted to talk with me about building their Windows Phone app. Years later, I realized this person was Jan Koum, CEO of a messaging company called WhatsApp. You may have heard of it. Facebook bought it for a historic $19.3 billion in 2014, when WhatsApp had about 50 engineers. I was happily employed at the time, but had I been able to predict the future, I would have interviewed for the role. Of course, I had interviews that ended up being wasted time because the opportunity or offer was underwhelming. I regret opportunities that I pursued and turned down much less than I regret failing to engage with potentially interesting ones. 2. Waiting on a promotion versus switching jobs. You feel you have what it takes to perform at the next level. In this case, it's tempting to get out there on the job market and not wait months for a grueling promotion process in your current workplace. Why not do external interviews? Maybe you'll get an offer with the title you want and more money as well. This is an obvious option, especially when the job market is hot like it was in 2021 and 2022. However, before applying for positions, there's some nuance to consider. Promotions are typically backward-looking. To get promoted, you are expected to perform at the next level for 6 to 12 months, and a promotion confirms you did. What it also means is that you might be able to switch companies to reach that higher level and earn more. In fact, if you can move to a company in a higher tier, according to the trimodal compensation model we covered in the Career Paths chapter, your compensation might increase significantly. The backward-looking nature of promotions also means you could progress faster in your early career if you can get external offers at the next level and don't have to wait around to be promoted in your current workplace. The more senior you are, the riskier a new job is. Changing jobs is different at the staff and principal engineering levels than at more junior levels, because doing well in these senior roles requires good political standing. This means understanding how a new organization works and its unwritten rules, building trust with new key stakeholders, and knowing how to influence decisions that impact larger groups. Building a network of colleagues you trust and who trust you, and figuring out how the organization works takes significant time. When you switch to a new position, you have to start from scratch. If you don't get up to speed quickly enough, you can find yourself in a stressful situation of trying but struggling to meet heightened expectations. Tenure becomes increasingly important as you get more senior. While it's common for early-stage career professionals to change jobs often, not staying anywhere for at least 2 to 3 years can become a red flag in above-senior engineering recruitment. Staff and principal engineers need time to build connections and to execute longer-term, impactful projects. Driving this impact is done by understanding the context, making sense of the business, and prioritizing work correctly. Learning how to do this usually takes at least a year at most places. Tenure also brings the perspective which leaders need. By staying on the same team and at the same company for years, your old decisions come back to bite you and others. You appreciate how something which nobody considered at the time can grow into a big problem, or how doing a bit more work early can avoid a large amount of work later. Before quitting, consider what you'd leave on the table. This is especially true if you have not been at a company long. Building platforms that see large adoption takes years. Launching a product and then iterating through each growth stage also takes years. One reason why engineers and managers who work at high-growth startups for several years become increasingly sought after is that they see several growth phases play out in one place and can harness that valuable experience elsewhere. While researching this book, I talked with several Uber alumni who are now staff engineers, CTOs, and VPs of engineering at venture-funded startups. All spent a solid amount of time at the ride-sharing company, and all told me the same thing. Their years at Uber and going through its various growth phases have given them an edge today. They're making strategic decisions with confidence because they know what will happen in 6, 12, or 24 months' time. How? They spent long enough at Uber to see decisions play out along those time frames. Don't get me wrong, tenure is not what you want to optimize for. However, if you've worked in the industry for 8+ years, but didn't spend more than 2 to 3 years in any one place, then it could be a good idea to target staying in your next position for this long, in order to gain the perspective which only comes with tenure. The more senior you are, the harder it is to get promoted. Lack of internal opportunities to grow to the next level becomes more common with seniority. For example, you could come up against budget constraints, like when there's no money for a second staff engineer, but this is your next level. Not having space to grow is especially common for managers, who typically need to take on larger teams and deliver more impactful outcomes to get promoted. If you hit this wall, it can be sensible to look for external opportunities, especially if you're learning less or are determined to keep progressing in your career. When you get an offer, don't just assess it based on compensation. Instead, consider other important dimensions, such as career progression, colleagues you'd work with, challenges, company mission, flexibility, and so on. Finally, don't forget that missing out during a promotion cycle might feel like a big deal, but you probably won't remember it a decade later. Play the long game and think about your strategy across that time frame. 3. Preparing for tech interviews. How do you prepare for software engineer interviews? Luckily, there's no shortage of preparation materials to help in the form of online resources. This section is a short overview of what to expect in a typical interview process for senior-level engineers. Mid-sized and larger tech companies tend to use similar interview processes, which are sometimes referred to as Google-like, given their resemblance to how the big tech giant conducts interviews. Let's look into the different types of interviews. Initial screening. The goal here is to decide whether it's worth progressing a candidate to the technical screening based on the following parameters. Has the basic qualifications for the role. For example, if it's a staff-level role for which a candidate is expected to have 5+ years of industry experience, including in the back-end domain, then candidates lacking this do not proceed. Has the required soft skills. This is confirmed in an initial conversation with a recruiter or hiring manager. Is motivated for the interview process. A candidate can look great on paper, but are they motivated for the interview process? There are candidates who apply for roles out of curiosity, and some aren't motivated to engage with the process. In this case, proceeding would be a waste of time. The initial screening is done by the tech recruiter responsible for filling the position, the hiring manager, or an inbound sourcer. Inbound sourcer is a specialized recruitment role usually found at larger companies where every vacancy gets hundreds or even thousands of applications. Each one needs to be reviewed by a human, so these companies have a dedicated role for reviewing only inbound applications. The inbound sourcer role is usually the least coveted recruitment position because it's rarely exciting. But these people are very efficient at reviewing resumes and deciding whether a candidate is viable. When I was a hiring manager at Uber, I worked with several inbound sourcers who combed through many resumes per day. The initial screening is done in 2 phases, the resume screen and the initial call with the hiring manager. The resume screen. A resume is reviewed, and a decision is made on whether the applicant has the basic qualifications for the role. For this reason alone, there's a lot to be said for writing an effective software engineer resume. I wrote the book, The Tech Resume Inside Out, about precisely this task. Here are a few suggestions for writing an efficient resume. Remember, the goal is to convince the person doing the screening that it's worth doing an initial call with you. The goal is not to describe your career in minute detail. Tell the story you want the recruiter or hiring manager to hear for the position you're applying to. Highlight relevant experience. Tailor your resume. Don't send the same resume with every application. Instead, consider having a master version and tweaking it each time. Use an easy-to-scan template. The more easily a recruiter or hiring manager can scan a resume, the better. Avoid flashy formats and 2-column layouts. See the Pragmatic Engineer's resume template for a free template which checks these requirements. You can find this at blog.pragmaticengineer.com pragmaticengineer.com/the-pragmatic-engineers-resume-template or do a web search for the Pragmatic Engineers resume template. Stand out in results, impact, and numbers. Aim to present your achievements as specifically as possible. Define the impact of your work, ideally with numbers. A positive referral usually helps more than a fantastic resume. Seek out referrals from your network. For more advice, see my book, The Tech Resume Inside Out. The initial call with a recruiter or hiring manager. For candidates whose resumes pass, the next step is a phone call. The goal of this call is to gather more information about the applicant, their situation and what they are looking for, and to give them more context about the position. Sometimes this turns into a sales call to tell candidates why a vacancy is a compelling opportunity. When the call is with a recruiter, they usually gather some soft signals, like how clearly the candidate communicates and how interested they are in the position. When this call is with the hiring manager, they usually go a step further by gathering more signals and doing a stricter screening. I know hiring managers who deep dive into projects the candidate has done and delve into behavioral topics. Their goal is to progress people whom they'd be comfortable hiring, assuming they do well in the technical interviews. Technical screening. Once a candidate passes the initial screen, the employer is pretty certain they're interested and, on paper, has the desired qualifications. The next step is the technical screening, to validate that a candidate has the technical expertise which their resume claims. The goal is to ensure a candidate is technical enough for the role's requirements. Are they up to date with core technological concepts? And are they hands-on enough with technologies? Is hands-on enough with coding? It's hard to tell just how hands-on a candidate is with coding without verifying it. The technical screening almost always involves coding tasks which provide signals about this. Is worth inviting to a final interview. For everyone involved, interviews are a time investment. It's only worth proceeding to the final round with candidates who perform well in this screening. The technical screen is almost always done by software engineers, and more rarely by engineering managers. There are several popular ways to conduct this round. A synchronous coding challenge. The candidate does a live session or a video call where they solve a problem by writing code on the spot while conversing with the interviewer, who's a software engineer. A take-home coding challenge. This is an asynchronous coding exercise which candidates complete in their own time. The coding exercise can be time-boxed, for example, 90 minutes to complete it. Some exercises are less strict, come with guidance about how much time is usually spent on the exercise, and let the applicant decide how long to take. Another format to probe technical skills. Some companies prefer a synchronous interview where interviewers discuss technology concepts but don't do coding. Some companies give candidates technology quizzes to complete, and some do a debugging session with candidates. There are no formal rules, and many companies innovate here. How to prepare for the technical screening. Gather information on what to expect. The easiest way is to ask your recruiter contact what the format is and any advice they can offer on preparation. Once you've passed the initial screening, the recruiter will be on your side and interested in you doing well. Some employers send preparation materials for the technical screening so candidates aren't caught off guard. Understand how the challenge is evaluated. What's more important, functionality, code quality, or testing? Does the choice of language matter? Get answers to these questions before you start the challenge. Again, the recruiter is your best source of information. For synchronous exercises, ask questions from the interviewer. In technical interviews done on the spot, it's expected that candidates ask clarifying questions of interviewers, especially for senior and above roles. Sharing your thought process and occasionally seeking feedback can be a positive. For asynchronous tasks, set expectations for completion. Some asynchronous coding tasks involve significant time commitment, which you have to plan for. communicate your circumstances to the recruiter, and confirm whether they can accommodate your timeline. Find out if detailed feedback is provided before you invest time. Some take-home exercises demand tens of hours of work. There are few things more demotivating than putting in the time but getting no feedback later except a rejection message. So before you start, ask the recruiter if there is written feedback in the case of a rejection. Of course, this doesn't guarantee you will always get feedback, but it will make it more likely. On-site interviews. The final round of the interview process is often an on-site interview. The name refers to the common practice of holding the final set of interviews at the employer's offices. These are typically split into the following categories. Coding interview. Validating a candidate's coding and debugging. It could be an algorithmic interview or solving a real-world coding challenge. There are plenty of resources on how to prepare for these interviews. Here are a couple books I recommend. Cracking the Coding Interview by Gail Lockman McDowell. Decoding the Technical Interview Process by Emma Bostian. System Design Interview, also known as the Architecture Interview. This gathers signals about how well an engineer can design a system from scratch based on business requirements and how they can respond to scaling challenges. Books on how to prepare for this interview. 1. System Design Interview, An Insider's Guide by Alex Hsu. 2. System Design Interview, Volume 2 by Alex Hsu. Domain Deep Dive. An interview for revealing how capable candidates are in key technologies for the role. For example, for a back-end engineer, this could be a deep dive into distributed systems and the Go programming language. For an iOS engineer, it could be on Swift and more advanced mobile application development topics. As a note, interviewers tend to go into domain concepts during the coding interview and the system design interview. The hiring manager interview, also referred to as the behavioral interview. An engineering manager almost always conducts this interview. The goal is to determine if a candidate is a good fit for the team. This interview tends to go deep into motivation, handling conflict, approaching difficult situations. Does the candidate demonstrate or live the company's values? The hiring manager interview tends to vary by company, and often differs between hiring managers within the same company. For advice on navigating the hiring manager interview and interview process, I made a video called Confessions of a Big Tech Hiring Manager. You can find this video at pragmaticurl.com/confessions or by searching the title on YouTube. The Bar Raiser interview is special to Amazon and a few other larger tech companies like Uber. A long-tenured engineer or manager determines whether a candidate can raise the bar. These interviews tend to be a mix of technical, design, behavioral, and culture interviews. Other interview types. Smaller companies often have a session where candidates meet their potential future teammates and take questions from them. At some places, engineers meet their potential product manager, PM, or other business stakeholders who also interview them. All these interviews are hard to prepare for up front. Arriving well-rested, in a calm frame of mind, and treating it as an exercise in learning something new are among the most effective approaches I know. Staff and above interview loops. For staff and above roles, the interview process tends to be more bespoke. It's common for the hiring manager to build a custom interview process. At some companies, staff plus engineers typically go through the coding and systems design interviews, which other engineers also need to clear. But the coding interview may be a bit more forgiving. Some companies even drop the entry-level coding interview from the process. Staff plus interviews tend to have several additional rounds, such as a domain deep dive interview. When hiring for areas like payments, mobile, or distributed systems, there's almost always an interview to validate the depth of a candidate's expertise. A product manager interview, where they evaluate how well a candidate might work with product folks. A director-level interview, conducted as a bar raiser or a hiring manager interview. A second systems design interview, conducted by a staff or above engineer. 4. Downleveling. In tech, switching jobs often comes with a financial or title upside, but not always both. Switching for higher compensation can result in a lower title, like going from senior software engineer to SWE2, or from VP engineering to senior engineering manager. This is what happened to me when I went from principal engineer at Skyscanner to senior engineer at Uber, while my compensation increased. This is what I call the seniority roller coaster. To see an illustration visualizing the seniority roller coaster, visit engguidebook.com/audiobook. There can be several reasons for dropping in title while gaining in compensation, such as moving up a tier. A common reason is that moving to a higher tier company brings raised expectations but also more compensation. You may see your title slashed, but your compensation increases. Titles across companies have different expectations and compensation. For example, a senior title in big tech typically demands more of an engineer than it does at a small developer agency, a non-tech-first company, or a new startup. Interview performance. How a candidate performs at the interviews almost always feeds into leveling decisions, and is the most common reason for downleveling. Candidates whom interviewers are unsure about often get offered a position a level below the one they interviewed for. Changing companies and technology stacks might lead to a lower-level offer. Non-tech-first companies and developer agencies that judge candidates by years of experience in a given technology might offer a lower title to someone who only has a year of experience with Java, even though they've been a software engineer for 10 years. Downleveling for this reason is common for roles in which interviews focus on a specific technology. Downleveling is especially common when joining a big tech company for the first time. Because expectations are typically high, onboarding takes longer than at smaller places, and companies often aim to hire people who raise the bar at a given level. Dealing with downleveling. If you get an offer at a level below your current title, but with better pay, how do you proceed? Know that downleveling is common when moving up a tier. Employers can be tiered by their expectations of engineers at each level. At the top are the likes of Google, Meta, and other big tech giants, where engineers impact millions of users with each change they make. Engineers are expected to know and follow more processes and best practices than at companies whose leadership is less technical or engineering impact is magnitudes smaller. It should be no surprise that a senior engineer at an agency building niche apps with thousands of users has different and easier to meet expectations than a senior engineer building an app with hundreds of millions of users. Do your research on what the lower title means. Ask for the definition of the level and the next one as well, so you can evaluate whether you're missing skills or the experience needed. If so, it might be an opportunity to gain them. All companies with strong engineering cultures will have well-defined competencies and clear expectations for different levels. Tell the hiring manager if you disagree with the leveling. Voice your opinion, show examples of your experience, and ask if the hiring committee could consider you for the next level. There's nothing to lose and everything to gain as long as you do it in a respectful way. When I was a hiring manager, several candidates challenged leveling decisions. In each case, it made me look closer at interview signals and expectations for the level. Sometimes, we offered the next level. Consider rejecting an offer if you disagree with its leveling. Titles carry significance for your career and signal your status within an organization. If, after getting more information, you disagree with the assessment, then consider rejecting the offer. Interviews always have a subjective component which can produce false negatives. These will result in offers not being extended to excellent candidates or offers made at a lower level than candidates' merit. 5. Upleveling. While downleveling is more common, the opposite can also happen. You may get a higher level offer than you expected or believe you're ready for. When I worked at Microsoft, I was an L62 software engineer, one level below L63 senior software engineer. Yet, I received an offer from Skyscanner at the principal level, which was a level above the senior engineer level. What happened? In my case, my level at Microsoft likely did not reflect where I was in my career, and I could have been downleveled. At the same time, my experience was relevant for Skyscanner. I interviewed well and enjoyed a good connection with the hiring manager. I also had little intention to leave Microsoft except for a really good offer. And so, Skyscanner gave me an up-level offer, which sealed the deal. To get an up-level offer, several things need to be present. Perform well at the interview. Convince the hiring panel you're an outstanding candidate. Possess leverage to get a higher level. You have leverage if there's another offer at a higher level, or you're willing to walk away from an offer that's not a step up in levels. Have some people inside the company fight for you internally. Making a successful case for an up-level is usually down to one or more people on the interview panel, or who referred you, convincing the hiring manager or hiring committee. A word of caution. After you secure a higher level, be aware that expectations will be raised from day one. Be sure to clarify these and work hard to live up to them as you progress in your elevated role. 6. Onboarding to a new job. You've accepted a new job. Congratulations! Take time to celebrate this achievement. But don't relax. Onboard successfully to your new company so that you hit the ground running. Perceptions of you are shaped during your first few months in a new workplace, and often last years. This means that if you onboard at a good pace and your contributions exceed baseline expectations, you can easily be seen as a great hire. In contrast, if your onboarding is seen as slow or somehow difficult, you might be perceived as being less efficient, an assumption which may take longer to undo than your onboarding took. As a new joiner, you can and should take ownership of your onboarding and not just hope to be welcomed with a fabulous onboarding process. Doing so means you'll onboard faster and look like someone who hits the ground running. This perception should make life in your workplace easier long into the future. Here are ways to own your onboarding from before day one. At all companies and levels. Helpful approaches. If there's a long notice period after signing a new contract, consider catching up with your future manager before you start. Ask for suggestions on how to prepare to hit the ground running. Read the book, The First 90 Days, by Michael D. Watkins. It shares some of the best advice on how to create a great image when starting at a new place. Keep a work log brag document from the start. This will help you reflect as you onboard and serve as a great resource for manager one-on-ones, performance reviews, and promotions. Keep a weekly journal. Write down 3 things you learned and 3 things you don't understand during the first few months. Clarify your goals with your manager for the first month, the next 3 months, and the first 6 months. Onboarding to a smaller company. Some helpful activities at startups and small organizations. Clarify the work you'll do before you join. Connect with the most senior person early on. They'll often have long tenure. Don't assume how things work. Ask. This is especially important when arriving from a larger company. You could come across as ignorant if you suggest things that make little sense in your new environment. Aim to ship something in week one. There's no excuse not to at a small company. Onboarding to a larger company. Large organizations are more complex, so tame this complexity from day one. Get an onboarding buddy, even if not assigned one. They are ideally someone on the team whom you can go to with questions and who's ready to be interrupted in order to help you get up to speed. Keep a cheat sheet document in which you record everything that's new. This could be acronyms and their meanings, build commands, bookmarks to key resources, and much more. Doing this will speed up your learning and could be extra material for the onboarding documentation. Familiarize yourself with the company's tech stack. Brush up on new languages or frameworks you'll be working with. Accept that many things don't make sense at first, especially if you arrive from a smaller company. Don't worry, this is normal. Onboarding to a senior or above role. As a more experienced engineer, add structure to your onboarding. Connect with a senior or above peer. Understand how they organize and measure their work. Prioritize being productive on the team's code base and becoming hands-on with it. Clarify 3, 6, and 12-month expectations with your manager. Understand current and future projects and the team's priorities. What is the team working on and why does it matter? How does this all fit into the company's strategy and priorities? Find and browse outage documents like postmortems, which are relevant to your team and area, in order to understand problem areas and not be caught off guard when familiar issues reoccur. Start writing a list of engineering teams worth knowing. When you hear a new team mentioned, add its name to this list. Then, introduce yourself to a member of that team and learn what they do and how your teams are connected. Making this type of contact is very easy as a new recruit, as you have an excuse to introduce yourself because you're new. You can learn a lot about other teams this way and make contacts who can be useful in the future. Onboarding to a staff or above role. Staff plus roles vary across companies. Aim to figure out what's expected of you and then build your network so you can solve challenging problems and deliver the impactful results expected at this level. Meet your team early and make a friendly impression. Also meet peer staff plus engineers early. You'll rely heavily on them to understand how things work, especially at larger companies. Try to make a few new buddies. Staff plus roles differ by company, so figure out what's expected and what's not in your role. Clarify 3, 6, and 12-month expectations with your manager, and also ideally with your skip-level manager, the manager of your manager. What are the team's top priorities and the biggest problems to address? Spend time with product folks to understand their current concerns and plans.